So that's right, 1999. The world waited with bated breath to find out if computers would kill us. Movies were coming out left and right. A young Greg marveled over popcorn aplenty as he worked at a movie theater with the three guys sitting around this table, joining him like...
Ryan.
John.
And I'm Glenn.
So, yeah, 99. What
25 years ago.
Fuck, don't say that, Glenn.
So 25 years ago, all four of us were at the same point in our lives, pretty much. All working at a movie theater.
And it was all downhill from there.
Throwing drink bibs off the roof.
We threw drink bibs off the roof. We tested the tensile strength of film by trying to climb from inside an auditorium into the projection booth.
Yeah, then we built a, some sort of cargo net out of some film.
We did. Here's the thing. I would be curious.
I won't talk about that.
I would be curious to talk to people that work at theaters currently. I can't imagine it was anything like our days at that theater.
Considering the fact that when we checked prints, we had alcohol.
Not Prince, the musician that was just playing.
The film prints, we had alcohol, which we learned that, was it Aftershock and Avalanche melts the bottom of courtesy cups?
Yeah,
and all right, so the sentence you just said probably makes no freaking sense to a lot of people.
So what you got to understand
Avalanche was a bright
blue Romulan ale looking liquor.
And had rock candy at the bottom.
It did.
And
Aftershock, it was like, wasn't it like...
It was a red version of it.
It was like mint, right? And then the Aftershock was the red one that was
like cinnamony. Yeah.
And it was evil.
We had courtesy cups at the theater, and we would pour our drinks into there.
Courtesy cups were meant to hold popcorn salts. And water. And
liquids.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember one of our coworkers, Colin Avery, loved the Avalanche. And he didn't want people to know that it was F of this alcohol, so he just said that was his favorite G.I. Joe.
We called him Avalanche. We had nicknames at the
theater.
We
also filled up popcorn tubs with soda many nights.
That is very true.
And big, giant yellow popcorn, like yellow bags.
Bags.
And they remember the Will Rogers Foundation used to give us those little buckets.
We drank out of those motherfuckers.
Well, I mean, there was 14 theaters that we had and like probably 20 employees, and they sent us like 50 of those things.
they were very ambitious back then.
Yep. All those were the days.
You ever wonder how a weight bench got into the projection room?
I don't know, but things happened on that bench.
Things happened on the bench, but how did it get up there? Who brought a fucking weight bench to work with them one day? It was always there since I started working.
It came with the mall.
I guess so. Yeah.
And we had bug eye security guards.
By the way,
a great game room attendant.
Oh man,
mm-hmm. Jeff, I talked about him today.
He's legendary.
Yeah, if you listen to this, Jeff, we want you on the show.
Wait, so you're telling me it's not on the radio?
So
so people listen to this.
Yeah, we may have told this story before, but. People were talking about like scary movies earlier at work, and I was talking about how the movie itself can be very scary. And someone said something about The Exorcist. I said, "Well, we had a friend that used to work." Now, again, if you've never heard this story before, prepare yourself. We had Jeff who worked in the game room, and I believe when The Exorcist being re-released or something.
No, he was older than all of us, and he was telling us about the first time he saw The Exorcist when he was younger, when it was just released.
So he said he went to a midnight showing of it, and he's like, he was really scared. And he was driving home, and back then he didn't have a lot of streetlights, and he had no air conditioning in his car, so he had the windows rolled down. And as he's driving down the road, a owl flies in through his passenger window and out his driver's window. And I about had a fucking heart attack. I had to pull over to the side of the road.
Jesus Christ. Jeff, I hope you know what podcasts are and you listen to those because we want you on the show.
I'll be honest, like we could do a feature episode just telling the story.
We should totally do an episode where we talk about, we give a bunch of stories and people should vote on what is real and not real.
That's actually a very good idea.
And I mean, you got to understand, like our time at the movie theater, it was a lot like the kind of situation like in Clerks, where it's like now the movie theaters are so much more corporate and structured, everybody will just get fired for every little thing. You know?
We used to be able to pick the trailers we wanted.
We could do whatever the hell we wanted when we worked there.
Yeah, the trailer rooms would come in and they'd be like, these are the two that have to be on it, everything else was suggested.
And they never told us what was too many.
I mean, when I think back at the stuff that we did, it looks, if you look at it, it looked like we were trying to get fired, and we never did.
You know what it actually reminded me of? The show Chuck. It reminded of everything that happened at the Bymore.
Yeah.
Was I us think at the most trouble we actually got into was when Glenn and I had a lightsaber battle on the roof and the cops showed up.
they shone
that was,
a spotlight.
That was Glenn and I.
That was y'all too? I was up there.
You were around.
Was I not involved in it?
You might have been in the office at the time, but it was Glenn and I. Glenn had the robe on.
No, I was on the roof.
I had a green lightsaber. Glenn had a red.
I think I might have came up there after it happened.
And we're up on the roof, and we're having this lightsaber battle because episode one's coming out, and we're all excited. And all of a sudden, there was a Toys R Us down the way, and all of a sudden, a light hits us, and we hear a bullhorn, and the sound we hear is...
It was much like the adults in Charlie Brown. Yeah.
And we had no fucking clue what they were saying. It was probably, what are you idiots doing up there?
Now, I'm pretty sure Glenn and I did this. I think we've all done it. But there were nights where it was really slow, and we would wait until Star Wars ended and get our lightsabers and go into the auditorium with Duel of the Fates playing in surround sound.
I thought you were
going to
say there were nights of endless pleasure. There was more than any...
And, oh my God, like, to have a lightsaber duel in the dark with Duel of the Fates blasting Lord. Digital sound. Hilarious.
And
awesome time.
Sometimes one would blast Incubus Succubus. So one of my favorite stories with Incubus Succubus is...
I don't even know what that is.
Incubus Succubus was a band that Bob Wright
liked. But it's
not
Incubus.
Incubus Succubus.
I just want to establish that people... This is not the band Incubus.
Oh, no. It's Incubus Succubus.
Yeah.
I'll see if I could find a song of theirs.
There was a gentleman that worked with us named Bob, and Bob was a fascinating guy. He lost his virginity in a coffin.
He was a mortician.
And
theater was his second job.
You know, I never bothered to ask if the girl was live, but here we
no,
are.
No, we didn't ask. I guess we probably should have.
But Bob liked all kinds of weird shit, and one of the things he liked was a band called Incubus Succubus.
I mean, Bob was a weird enough guy to where you say you wonder if she was alive. I mean, Bob might have actually lost his virginity to the coffin. I don't know.
Could be. You know, satin feels nice.
Could be.
But he played this band for us, and we're all like, yeah, Bob, that's great. And
Incubus Succubus.
Hopefully they don't sue us.
I feel like some sort of portal's about to open. You shut that shit off.
So,
what the fuck is that noise?
Well, eventually this song is going to get
is
to
that
a
like
point.
A saw blade?
Okay, what you can't see right now is Glenn is almost in tears.
What the fuck is going on?
That's enough.
It almost sounded like a hockey horn when someone scores a goal for a second.
So imagine that hockey's horn music, and I don't know, had we like played it for him and choked it, like, but somehow or another it got left in the CD player of one of the auditoriums, and it's this next morning about 10-11 o'clock, and this elderly couple goes in to watch their movie, and the pre-show music comes on, and it's volume all the way up, Incubus Succubus, and this elderly man and woman clutch their ears in horror and are like, ah! Looking up at the window.
Yeah.
Oh, Glenn, do you need a tissue?
I'm good. I was remembering Toshi Kubota.
Oh, yes. So. Toshi Kubota, for those who don't know, sang Just the Two of Us. It's the first time we heard it before.
Yeah, it was some single that was sent to the theater for
some reason.
We got
so much random shit.
And it was Toshi Kubota's version of Just the Two of Us.
We also got introduced to the Bacon Brothers.
One of the many things I'm grateful for the theater.
That's when I first heard Fiona Apple for the first time. She was playing on the before
and
show.
Train was the first time I heard.
So
that's what was going on in our lives at this
1999
point. But in the rest of the world, like, we were worried the world was going to end. Well, I wasn't.
Because someone didn't think shit through.
Y2K, and then...
The Y2K bug, which turned out to be fuck all.
I was waiting for only one thing. My first Star Wars film as a semi-adult. Like, Return of the Jedi, I think, was probably the first film I saw in theaters as a kid.
It was mine. Well, the one I remember.
It's the one I remember the most. And I just never thought the day was going to happen. That we were going to have a Star Wars movie. And the
like a new one.
Yeah, like the anticipation for episode one. And I think people forget... Lucas released the special editions of the original trilogy maybe a year or two.
It was in the 90s, yeah.
Before this. And so it like amped
97.
Up. Yeah, it amped up the hype to wait for these to come out. So
Yeah, episode one, The Phantom Menace, was the one that everybody was waiting for.
The Sci-Fi Channel came to our theater, and before they realized, they went to the wrong theater, and they left.
They went to the bigger one after that.
Yeah.
But, so we've had it's been 25 years, and I know at the time, we all loved The Phantom Menace. Out of just blind love of Star Wars.
That's what it was, because I remember when we watched it, we all just kind of looked at each other and were like, that was good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. Great.
I mean...
The prince came in TIE fighter looking boxes.
Yeah.
And we went and got all the cups, and we went to
the Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut, and we said, we're looking for R2-D2, and she said...
We have Sebulba and Mr. Binks. Because, and I don't think... Like, especially younger listeners have any idea of the marketing blitzkrieg that was released on the public with Phantom Menace everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was with a lot of stuff back then, and all the fast food places. And it was the chain that owned, the people that owned, it was Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, and KFC. And you could buy the cups.
Right. Had these huge, we went to each.
Yeah, and each Space one had balls, different
the
ones.
Breakfast
yeah.
cereal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like, what was it, the Mountain Dew, and was it Pepsi? They all had the cans with the different Star Wars characters on there.
I think it's easy to look back now because the sequel trilogy's done, the prequel trilogy's done. As a standalone film, I think Episode One, to me, if you go back and rewatch it, if you watch it, it's like a kid's movie.
It is a kid's movie.
It's not,
and that's fine.
It wasn't made for the original trilogy fans. It was made for kids that were born around 99. If you were 8 years old and saw Episode One,
and for some people, and Glenn will agree with me on this, that's their trilogy and that's what made them love Star Wars, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, and in 20 years, we'll probably get the same thing with the sequel trilogy. I mean, that's kind of the thing with Star Wars. It's so much with nostalgia. Whatever you see as a kid is what you're going to remember.
I mean, I will give Lucas these. At least he didn't just rehash the original trilogy. He came up with a completely different, like, you could sort of look, the sequel trilogy tries to sort of make, you know, Force Awakens very much like a New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Last Jedi, kind of a little bit, and it's free for all in the third one. But at least the prequel trilogy is just very, very different and dark by the end.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but
and still the lightsaber duel, and I mean that's possibly the best lightsaber duel in the entire.
We had that soundtrack, and we were like,
oh, the Duel of the Fates. Amazing.
Yeah.
The soundtrack spoiled the movie.
I believe, was it like right when that movie premiered? Didn't MTV play that music video? And there was a music video.
They did.
For like a 24-hour
show. And there was actually some dialogue that was not in the film.
That's right.
When Darth Maul was talking about fear.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Speaking of dialogue, we went and searched for the toys during that time, too.
We did.
Yeah, we would go to Walmart back in a time where Walmart was 24 hours a day. We would go, they would be unpacking toys, and we would look for them. And there were certain toys that had lines from the movie. And before the movie came out, that was huge. We wanted to hear what they said.
Do you remember that the soundtrack for the episode one gave away?
We talked about, the Qui-Gon.
Qui-Gon's funeral.
One of the funny things was one of the Queen Amidala or Princess Amidala figures had a line that they ended abruptly.
Because if you watch the movie, she gets cut off as
she's speaking. Yeah, and so basically she says, "The droid armies of the trade."
Yep.
End of sentence.
That's right. But we got Boss Nass. We got a bunch of fun characters.
Yeah. Captain Tarples is still my favorite gun.
So, interestingly enough, as us being huge sci-fi nerds, and we were waiting for Star Wars, another sci-fi film.
Oh, and this one snuck the fuck up on us.
Totally changed the landscape.
And maybe one of the best teaser trailers of all time.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because they never explain in any of the trailers what the Matrix
Unfortunately,
is.
No one can be told what the Matrix is.
Everyone went and saw that and had no idea what it was.
That's right. Hey, no one knew.
It was brilliant.
It was
brilliant marketing.
One of the best marketing campaigns of all time, I think.
I agree.
And I think if you look at just movies with special effects, specifically sci-fi movies, there's a case that can be made that movies pre-Matrix and post-Matrix,
you
can tell the difference.
Right.
Absolutely.
And the Matrix visual effects still hold up very well today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, in fact, we're getting a new film, right?
I don't know about this.
I don't know. Look, we rewatched the last one recently, and Heather found some video that kind of broke down, you know, why the person really liked that one. I still say Matrix Resurrections, I really loved it.
I said it at the time that we talked about it. It was one of my favorite film reviews we've ever had, because there are very few films where we're all over the place. And I know you and I really liked it. Glenn didn't.
I didn't.
John thought it was just okay at best. I thought
it was brilliant.
Most of us are usually pretty much on the same page with stuff, or one or two, one of us may be off, but that's the first time it's been very rare where we're all divided on a film. But yeah, the original Matrix, though, there's no device there.
Oh, no.
It's very rare that a movie, not, I'm talking about Revolutions here, a movie can ruin a different movie. Like, it made me not like Reloaded anymore.
And I liked Reloaded
a lot.
I loved Reloaded when it came out.
Yeah, and I think, I'll be honest with you, whenever I rewatch, I don't get to Revolutions because Reloaded ends on a great cliffhanger. Yeah. And you're right, like, I thought, was Reloaded better than the original? Of course not. But I thought it was very, very good. I thought it had one of the best chase sequences I've seen.
Oh, yeah. Well, so this is the problem. Again, Reloaded opened up the world a bit and showed a lot of promise. And then we could argue about expectations in a movie. But where the where they chose to go in the third film...
Remember the Animatrix?
Yeah.
You know, I've never seen it.
It's cool. I've seen it. It's really good.
It's cool.
And then I think it's on Max, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
And then something they tried, which I don't know, it's kind of something that they're still trying to kind of perfect now, was they had the video game, and it featured all the actors from the movies, and it was like the Matrix Reloaded happened, and then you were supposed to play the video game, and that led into the third movie.
So, and now that's been invalidated by this latest movie, the story like points in that. The thing is, and Ryan and I have had this debate a lot, but and I think we kind of are on the same side of it, but I don't think that you should have to read a bunch of Apocrypha. It should add to it, but you shouldn't have to read that to get the other things, and that's kind of a thing I think is crucial. Now, you know, The Matrix itself, like that one movie by itself, I think even if they had not made any sequels, that would have been, we'd still be talking about it.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think the sequels detracted from it at all. In fact, like when they re-released it in theaters, did we all go see it again, or is that just me? Or
well, I remember when they released them in IMAX, and this was before IMAX was like at your standard theaters.
We went to the aquarium.
It was like the IMAX theaters at like aquariums and like planetariums and stuff.
And I believe that's where I saw The Matrix Reloaded the first time.
Right, and that was like amazing because
The Matrix is such a big deal. I remember when the trailer for Reloaded aired. I don't remember what movie I was watching, but when the trailer came on, the audience was applauding during the trailer, and I was just like, holy shit. Like,
it was such a good movie that Glenn and I were going to a costume party at John's in Baton Rouge, and my car broke down, and Glenn was dressed as Neo, and I was very sad because I didn't get to see the end of that night. I had to go home.
But yeah, that was 19.
So we're still in 1999. What other...
I forget what...
All right, well, you mentioned...
How did Glenn get to the party?
His dad picked
my
him
dad,
up.
My dad
bought.
Oh, okay.
Because we couldn't, we had a leak, like basically something happened with like my oil or something.
Yeah, your car just broke down.
And we limped back and we made it to like, you know where that Walgreens is on the expressway?
Right.
But we made it there and like we didn't know I didn't know what was going on. And so you know, Mr. Glenn came and got Glenn.
Yeah. And then did your dad come and get you?
He got me and we got the car back to the house.
Greg's shit box?
Yeah. But no, you were saying which other movies? We just talked about Y2K, Office Space.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Was that 99?
Yeah. It was all about Y2K.
I do remember. I just want to go back to that party. I do remember you getting there and you walking in and you had the sunglasses in your hand.
Yeah.
And Patrick said, oh, look, he's dressed like Neo. And Frankie goes, oh, I didn't see his sunglasses first. I thought he was Don Bosco.
Yep.
That's right.
Because that's what that
That's happened. What it looked like. That's what it looked like.
100% true.
That was true. But,
Office Space.
Glenn, you need to get the hat.
I'll get the hat.
That's the definition Office Space. Of cult classic.
So Office Space is still relevant today.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
There are leaders and managers and businesses that act exactly like Lumberg. I think Lumberg's picture should be hung on corporate walls a lot like they hang like the president or like the attorney general's picture on different walls of like the FBI. Because that movie... God! What?
Because if you remember
disagree with you on that, Craig.
Like when you talk about cult movies, it kind of didn't do very well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because remember, the promotional material was just that post-it note.
It was very, very,
and it was just like every poster said "from the creator of Beavis and Butthead," and that's all it said, and it was a post-it note, man.
Mike Judge's films are kind of famous for not really marketing themselves very well, not doing very well, but getting cult followings.
Right. But it was a bunch of office nerds working at a tech company, and the soundtrack was almost entirely gangsta rap.
And this movie, I don't think there's been a single more relatable film dealing with work than this one. Like, even if you don't work in an office, there's things in this that will just be like, I completely identify with that.
Jennifer Aniston's character.
Mm-hmm. So, Greg, what would you do if you had $1 million? Besides two chicks at the same time.
Honestly, there's a high dividend stock I'd put it in pays out 10. No, it pays 10% a month. So I'd get 10 grand a month.
What you're saying is basically what the friend says in that.
It's sound, fucker.
That's just a boring answer.
Buy me 1% of Volvo. So I know my money's going to make the safest vehicles on the road. That's a line from Broken Arrow.
Yeah, that's what I do. I get $10,000 a month in perpetuity.
All right, that's boring. All right, what other movies came out in 1999?
I don't have to work anymore.
All right, so do you want to do the freaky one or the kids one?
Let's go with the kids one first.
Toy Story 2.
Oh, maybe one of the best sequels ever.
I agree.
I don't know. Stinky Three's Pete. Pretty good.
Three is legendary.
But two was very good when it came out. It kind of surprised people because I want to say when they were developing two, it was supposed to go straight to DVD. It was supposed to VHS. It was supposed to...
Disney was doing that a lot back then.
Right. And
Return of Jafar and whatnot.
Right. And then I think when some of the Disney execs saw it, they were like, no, this is something special, and they put it in theaters. And did it get nominated for Best Picture?
No, they didn't have 10 films back then.
Okay. Or it won...
It won Best something. Animated Feature, obviously.
So Newman was the villain.
That's right.
And
I always remember that scene of him eating fucking cheese puffs on the couch, and the effects were so groundbreaking back then. You could see the cheese dust all over him.
Yeah. Right, but and for some reason, so they used to have this game show that we auditioned for. It was the World Series of Pop Culture. Yes, and one of the questions, we got it right as a team. Because it was, who is the villain in Toy Story 2?
So the way they did this, the World Series of Pop Culture, it was a VH1 show. You can look it up. We didn't make it. Not because we weren't good enough. They just didn't pick us. Because we aced the test. But they made you sit in one row, and then your teammate was right behind you, and then back and forth. So you couldn't actually see or turn and look at each other. So the questionnaires you filled out, the first question was, one of them was the villain in Toy Story. And I wrote the prospector.
Yeah. One of us wrote Stinky.
And the other one wrote Pete.
Yeah, so if you put our answer
put together. Our answers together, we had the answer.
Yeah.
as a collective.
Right.
But it's a very good movie.
They introduced Jesse, who's become kind of one of the favorite characters in the thing. There was a very depressing Sarah McLachlan song in it.
Yeah.
It wasn't about animals.
It was not about animals.
It's not that one, but it's still a depressing song.
But
so building what was the a mystery movie you wanted to talk about?
The Sixth Sense.
Remember this film?
Yeah.
So it's very interesting you bring that up because Shyamalan's got a new movie coming up.
He does.
The Shamhammer?
Trap.
It's a good trailer.
It is an amazing trailer, but my wife, when his name popped on the screen, she was like, "Oh shit." Because it's a crapshoot with M. Night Shyamalan.
It is.
And I told her, I was like, "Look, you gotta kinda look at him like he's a home run hitter in baseball. Maybe he's going to hit a 400-foot home run, or maybe he'll just swing on three straight pitches and be struck
and,
out.
And would M. Night Shyamalan quote his own movie and say it felt wrong not to swing?
I mean, he swings for the fences. For better or worse, he goes all out. When he reins himself in, he can make decent little films like The Visit.
Swing away, Meryl.
Yeah, but he tends to just go all in. And this one, I feel like my hunch is I think he's going to get this one right. It looks really good.
It's a good trailer. There's a twist in the trailer, so I don't know if it's going to hit quite as hard when we see the actual film.
Which is why I'm kind of hopeful, because
I'm kind of curious who the protagonist is. Like, are we supposed to be rooting for the serial killer? Or are they going to release or they're going to have, like, a cop that we follow?
But he all started with The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
And Nate Bargatze does an interesting bit saying how it was more believable that we would think that his wife just didn't talk to him for a whole year than we believe that he's actually dead, even though we see him get shot in the first scene of the movie. I think it might be the biggest twist in movie history.
It's probably the most famous.
Maybe Psycho or Empire Strikes Back will be close.
No, I would say this might be the most famous one. I don't know if it's the best, but most people know this twist and they kind of reference it when they talk about movie twists. Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
I remember I was very upset because when we worked at the theater, they did like an employee appreciation night or something like that where everybody got to stay late and watch their choice of a movie.
Because like three things opened.
There was like
the
three things
night,
coming out. And And yeah, usually it was just by, like, two or three of us would stay to make sure the prints were okay. But everybody stayed. We had popcorn and everything. And I was kind of convinced to go watch Mystery Men. And then when I came out of it, everybody was walking out with their mouths all wide open because they had just watched The Sixth Sense.
So I don't know if I saw Mystery Men, or was that the same day Basketball came out? There were like three movies.
It was a bunch of movies that came out on the same day.
And I didn't see Sixth Sense that day. I
got stuck watching The Thin Red Line that night.
You know, no, you know what the other one? And it was a shitty horror movie. It was the one with Catherine Zeta-Jones, The Haunting.
Yes,
that one came out.
That had a good trailer.
It did have a good trailer.
Yeah. I know I wasn't. I think I was in with you.
That fucking movie where Woody Harrelson blows his ass off.
It's a Terrence Malick film.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, it actually wasn't that bad, but man, watching that movie at midnight was not fun.
Was it a We Were Soldiers type film, Ryan?
No, that would have been better.
Lay me down.
I still don't understand that music choice in that movie, but whatever.
In the cold ground.
But Sixth Sense.
Donnie Wahlberg lost, what, like 45 times?
I had no idea that was Donnie Wahlberg until someone said later that Donnie Wahlberg was in that movie, and I was like, what part did he play in the movie? And the guy in the beginning. I was like, holy shit.
And Haley Joel Osment delivered a performance he wouldn't top until Tusk.
Jesus.
Or The Boys.
Yeah. Yes. His sister's acting now, and she's pretty good.
Yeah.
But,
And that was when Toni Collette became like...
Oh, man, she was fantastic.
She was good.
I want to say she got an Oscar nomination.
She did get an Oscar nomination. And, I mean, before, I think she was in that Muriel's Wedding thing that was like... But it was just like the Australian, like, just kind of comedy, quirky comedy thing, and that's all she'd been in. And this was like... super dramatic role, and she was so good in it.
Yeah, but
she's a very pretty woman.
Yeah,
she is.
I think we can all agree that Shyamalan's masterpiece is best.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess career-wise,
Lady in the Water is so meta.
Oh, you shut your mouth.
So, you know, another thing about Shyamalan, he does some of his films. I think are divisive. See, I actually kind of like The Village.
Oh, I like The Village a lot.
My wife hates The Village.
I remember we went and saw The Village. So I had a kind of a part-time gig as a film critic, and we went to the press screening of this. Yeah. And the...
it was over at the UA over by Esplanade.
Yeah,
I love Signs.
I like Signs. But I remember when we left, the kind of studio rep stopped us and like, well, what did you think? And I'm kind of like, well, I figured out the twist about 10 minutes in. They were like, how? And I'm like... You didn't, kind of thing.
You're at the point with Shyamalan movies where it's like you're looking for a giant.
Exactly. That was the thing. Like that, I saw it too. Maybe not 10 minutes in, but I figured it out. I was realizing like they've never established what time frame this is.
Well, the twist in The Happening was that nothing fucking happened.
That's one of the best reviews I've ever heard from a movie. What other big movies before we end this thing came out in 1999?
The Mummy. That's another one getting re-released.
Ooh.
Brendan Fraser.
Talk about a surprise fucking hit.
Uh-huh.
That was a movie, I remember seeing the trailer, I'm like, that looks interesting, but I'll never forget watching it. Like,
who would have thought it would have spawned sequels and The Rock?
I didn't really like Brendan Fraser.
Haku Machete, Ryan. Haku Machete.
I was not the biggest Brendan Fraser fan. But he won me over with that role. Like he was
because he had so much fun.
I mean, that movie was a blast.
It was like Indiana Jones, but it was mixed with a horror movie. I mean, it had
Brian Henry and Rachel Weisz.
He went back with his brothers. Good old Winston.
You know what else came out that year? Just because I remember it from seeing the trailer so many times is John Travolta in The General's Daughter.
That was a good movie.
That was, yeah.
Oh, no. The General's
so,
Daughter.
You know what's funny about like working in a movie theater like
that?
That
was a good movie.
We saw all the movies. So there are movies that we have... No, like seriously. Yeah. We saw everything. So basically, there are movies that many people have no fucking frame of reference for that we own on fucking DVD.
Uh-huh.
I mean, look, we've only gone through maybe five films from 99. I mean, mm-hmm. I hate to sound like a get-off-my-lawn person, but they just don't make them like this anymore.
You kids.
There was like a great movie that came out like every two, 3
weeks. I am to tell you.
I'm serious. Think about it. Like
these movies were so much better than your little crappy films and your tickety-tocks.
All right, so we had Ministry of Unsavory... What?
Unsavory?
Unsavory.
Ungentlemanly
Warfare.
That's the porn version.
So, yeah, that might be a good one. Start writing that right now. So you had that one.
I would love to have Glenn write a porn.
So we had that one last week.
Hey, he fixes the cable.
Last film that y'all saw before that in theaters that y'all would consider really good?
Oh, I like the Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah.
That horror film?
Yeah.
I've been hearing some good stuff about that.
From us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not
you could, stream it if you do the free trial of AMC Plus. It's on there right now.
Well, I know what you're saying, though, Ryan, that consistently movies are coming
out
all the time.
Matt Damon's talked about why that is, I think.
And speaking of Matt Damon, we had Talented Mr. Ripley that came out this year.
Oh, that fucking movie.
Which they just...
Ripley's on Netflix, but I started it.
Believe it or not.
It's very weird.
Is it in black and white?
It is. Yeah. It's very, very strange. It's one of those, you got to get in the right mindset to start it. I started it kind of like late at night, you know, couldn't really sleep. And I put it on, I was like, yeah, I can't focus.
I liked the new Mr. Ripley movie, Saltburn. It was
The Talented Mr. Ripley, I think.
Jude Law, people kind of knew who he was after the...
I don't think people knew before this movie came out that it was going to be a gay film.
Oh, I guarantee you they didn't.
And I think some people even, like, I think it definitely, like, I think it opened doors for the type of movies that can be made. You think they could make The Talented Mr. Ripley without casting a gay actor in the main role? Like, I know that's sort of like a taboo thing it's now. Tom Hanks said he would not do Philadelphia.
People have opinions.
Yeah. I mean, it's all acting to me.
The streets of Philadelphia.
Jesus Christ.
But,
that's a great film. You should check it out.
A great film.
Also, if you want to go into comedies, one, and this trailer was everywhere, and this is one that, like, the first one was a cult hit, but it wasn't really a big hit. We had Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Yeah, baby!
I thought it was okay. I loved the first
one. I think the second one had a better femme fatale.
Oh,
Heather Graham was great.
Mm-hmm. Remember her video from American Woman with Lenny Kravitz?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
She still looks good, too.
She does. Yeah.
Boogie Nights.
She's timeless.
She is.
But now just remember the marketing campaign on this one was very smart, because remember it was a bunch of space stuff, and then
they tied it in with Star Wars.
And it said, if you see one movie this summer, see Star Wars. But if you see two, come
see
ours.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it made a shit ton of money.
Yes. And let's see. I guess we could talk about the Best Picture winner, American Beauty.
Oh.
I mean, we could talk about it. That movie, I don't know, it was strange. Like, when I watched it, even though it was kind of a little pedo, for some reason I didn't get that when I first saw it at the time. Like, I didn't think he would ever, like, take it... Like, I just thought he kind of used her image as inspiration. I didn't think he would ever actually do anything with her. So, but if you rewatch it, the whole fucking movie is just uncomfortable. And
it's very creepy.
Especially now.
Yes. Especially now, with all the stuff about Kevin Spacey. Allegedly.
Good Scott Bakula performance.
He was the neighbor. He is a tax attorney.
Yeah.
Well, I think, too, like, it has one of my favorite lines when she comes through with Peter Gallagher through the drive-thru.
No.
He's like, you don't get to tell me what to do ever again.
Well, actually,
this is Janine.
Janine is head drive-thru manager, so you're kind of on her turf.
See, we had two pretty iconic Al Pacino movies, so...
Really?
We had The Inside. Oh, you want to tell the story?
Well, no, I wasn't going to tell the story. I remember the two movies that came out.
Yeah,
it was Jose.
Any
Given Sunday and The Insider.
The Insider.
So the story behind this, folks, is that you were watching...
Any Given Sunday.
And our friend Jose, who's been on the show before, it was very long, and he said, it can't be over because...
He hasn't said, I fought for you and I still fight for you.
And you said...
And I said, that's The Insider, Jose.
And I believe Jose's response was, fuck you, I'll kill you dead.
It was.
More than likely. I will verify with
him
later.
In Jose's defense, we had just seen both of the trailers nonstop for probably 3 months.
And both are very good movies for different reasons.
The Insider is a very unique Michael Mann film.
Why do you think that movie's so forgotten? That's a classic
film. It's a very good film.
With incredible performances.
Russell Crowe might be his best performance.
Because Michael Mann, I
wouldn't argue that.
He's better known, I feel like, for his gritty crime movies. And this is, yes, I mean, there's some criminal activity goes on, but it's not like a Heat or a Collateral, or not that kind of gritty crime.
And then we had the, what you call it, Any Given Sunday.
Any Given Sunday.
I love that movie.
Willie Beeman.
That was one of Jamie Foxx's first, like,
I'm going to tell you something. The scene when he goes to Al Pacino's house for lunch and the two of them are having a conversation, I knew right then and there, I was like, Jamie Foxx is the real deal. You could see it then. He could go toe-to-toe with one of the best actors in the world.
Because he had just been, like, just a comedian before.
Yeah. I was blown away.
Football is a game of inches.
Oh, that great speech.
Yeah.
So. It's no two for the money, but...
Speaking of great speeches, didn't Deep Blue Sea come out this year?
I believe so.
Okay, by the way, if you've never seen Deep Blue Sea, that movie, it's good if you watch it with us. Like, really enjoyed it.
You should do at least two shots of something.
Yes.
Right before the movie starts. And then I would say when Samuel L. Jackson arrives at the facility, do two more shots. And then away we go.
Tom Jane, baby.
And yes, as Ryan intimated earlier, deepest bluest, my hat is like a shark's fin.
He actually wrote that shit.
He did. He was like, oh, that's great. Let's write that down.
So, and just looking at this.
Didn't we screen that?
Oh, yeah.
We did.
Because remember, they promoted it where we thought it was going to be like a Samuel Jackson starring film.
And I don't know if I'm remembering this correctly, but I feel like some of y'all had been drinking that night.
Probably.
And I remember, like, y'all had turned the volume up so fucking loud that I think I, at one point, was like, can I go turn it down? Y'all said, fuck no!
So, one of my favorite things about this movie is in Chappelle's Show, when he does Samuel Jackson beer, he's like, ain't you seen my movies? Juice, that was a good one. Deep Blue Sea, they ate me. A shark fucking ate me.
Was it Stellan Skarsgård? Remember he's got his arm bit off?
And... yes, he did, because he was smoking.
That's right. And then... one of the most male written like scenes ever. Like a man had to have written this. So a shark is chasing a scientist.
I remember Greg.
A female scientist through a hall, and it's that's half full of water. And the only way that the scientist can think to kill said shark was to take her wetsuit off, stand in her wet white underwear, stand on top of said wetsuit, and pull some wires down and electrocute the shark. While she's in her underwear. This happens in this movie.
You know, I saw something on X recently that test audiences wanted her character to die.
What's X?
Twitter.
Okay,
her character
you.
Did die, didn't it?
Well, like, she didn't die in the original script. Like, I guess.
Yeah.
And so they added that scene in, and, like, the person on X was saying, she cured Alzheimer's. Like, why are we killing her off?
Yeah, but it's a rule. In all movies where there's a monster, whoever created the monster dies.
Yeah, John Hammond needed to. He didn't die in the movie. He died in the book.
Those sharks, you know, they may have been manipulated.
They got smarter.
They got smarter, but they couldn't chew through LL Cool J to save their lives.
That's right.
Come here, bird.
They ate his bird.
They got chunks of him. I mean, they ate Michael Rapaport in 0.2 seconds.
Yeah.
But they dragged LL Cool J across the ocean for about 30 seconds. And so he could stab him with his crucifix.
So.
Jesus killed that shark.
So also this year, and again, this is how good this year the movie is. All right, so I'm just going to read the best supporting actor category for this year. So we talked about Jude Law and The Talented Mr. Ripley.
That was one?
Yep. Okay. We had Michael Caine and The Cider House Rules.
Cider House Rules!
Charlize Theron, one of her first big
films. Good night, you beautiful boys of New England.
We had Michael Clark Duncan in The Green Mile.
Smelling take my hand, bread. Boss.
And we had Tom Cruise in Magnolia.
Frank T.J. Mackey.
So let's talk about Magnolia.
Okay, that strange movie film. Is strange film full of good performances.
Can anyone... rationally explain to me the frogs.
It's a fucking metaphor. The movie is. it's again like the whole fucking movie.
There you go.
Thanks.
Are you satisfied?
I'll never be satisfied.
So it's a biblical plague. So the whole thing like it gets heavy handed towards the end, but I think like the character relationships are great, and I think that Tom Cruise deserved to be nominated for that performance. It was more different than anything he had done before. I fuck it. He should have won.
John C. Reilly. Remember how good he was in it as the cop fell in love with the coked out girl.
I would have given it to Michael Clark Duncan.
I would have given it to Tom Cruise. I think.
Did Michael Clark Duncan?
Glenn Michael agrees. Glenn knows.
Oh, fuck that. The Cider House did not rule.
The Cider House is a place where all the boys come.
I will say this: Tom Cruise's best performance in that film has no dialogue. It's just his emotional reaction to seeing his father.
That shows you his range.
I mean, the dude's got Xenu behind him. How the fuck can you...
His thetans are gone, Ryan.
So in that movie, he's being interviewed, and when the person interviewing him kind of calls him on some bullshit he said, when he just stopped talking, and he's like, I'm quietly judging you.
It's great. It's good shit, man.
It's a good scene, but I mean, remember William H. Macy is the guy in the...
Oh, fucked up his teeth?
Yeah.
That was the funniest part. He spent all that money to get his teeth fixed. To...
And was it his boss that he wanted to give the money from? Wasn't it,
it was a Hispanic.
That guy.
Doc Ock? Alfred Molina?
It was, yep, you're right.
Because he did a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson movies, right?
Yeah, especially his great role in Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So we had that. We mentioned it, I think, last episode, being John Malkovich.
Malkovich.
What a unique...
I love that movie.
In our last episode, Glenn was trying to explain Fallout. And, at one point you're like, I don't know if I'm really explaining it. And I told you, it doesn't sound very good. How could you explain being John Malkovich to make it sound interesting?
Everything about it is strange, but it works. It is a delicate balance of crazy, and I fucking love that movie. I will stand by it. The fact that there's a fucking special feature on it that we watched because it's the fucking video from the movie. The fact that, Sosa, I'm thinking of you.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing.
I'll make you
me wife.
Be gone with you, you foul ting.
Literally, 5 seconds later. I shall make you me wife.
So this is one
you and your
and I'll build for ye a floor between the seventh and the eighth in my building, so that you and your accursed kind, his wife, mind you.
So I didn't see this film at its initial release. I remember watching it with you guys. Y'all showed it to me, and I remember when the movie they first get to the seventh and a half floor. I remember turning to Glenn. I'm like, why is the floor like that? And he's like. Glenn said they explained in the orientation video. I was like, there's a fucking orientation video? He's like, it's a special feature in the DVD. We were drinking then. But, that movie's amazing.
Yeah, Catherine Keener, kind of the first thing I really remember her sticking out in. There's
unrecognizable Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
Yeah, and remember, how can we forget Charlie Sheen playing himself?
Yeah.
Ouch. That is hot.
You, me, perhaps Gary Sinise.
That's right. But Sean Penn, I think, played himself in that. It was a crazy movie. If you want to go to rom-coms, there was a big hit called Notting Hill.
Oh, wow, that's right.
Solid. I appreciate it at the time, but I like it later. I
remember Howard Stern saying he loved that more than Star Wars. That's one of the best romantic comedies ever.
I'm just a host standing in front of you, asking you to not suck so much, Ryan.
I'm not going to suck.
And... I guess we could talk about...
Can't promise that, Ryan.
Denise Richards is, earth-shattering performances. Dr. Christmas Jones.
Christmas Jones,
and
baby.
The World Is Not Enough.
That was a good one.
I kind of think her Wild Things line that we quote so much should have been in this film.
I seem to remember our good buddy Chris Anderson when we were sneaking that movie at the end when they're in the ship and it's going down and all of a sudden she just in the sub and she just pops up with the wet t-shirt on. He just started losing his mind in the theater.
Boof.
We couldn't even pay attention to the movie anymore because we thought he was going to hurt himself.
The best thing to come out of that movie, honestly though, is the fact that it has made me for years dream of owning an Aston Martin Vanquish. To this day, that is the car I want.
There you go.
So, and I think the last movie, because we had some anime, Tarzan was big that year. We had the South Park
film. My second favorite Disney movie. Park.
You remember when the South Park movie came out, it was just edgy and you couldn't believe they were actually getting away with it.
And again, we worked at the theater. Remember how we had to put an employee on the door to make sure people could, children couldn't sneak in there.
Yeah, and remember how bad it was when it came out. How inappropriate it was. And now you just watch any just regular episode of South Park, and it's 20 times worse than that movie ever thought of.
I agree. Times have changed.
Yeah.
Now, South Park is special because we watched that movie, about 80 minutes worth of a film, laughing hysterically, enjoying it. And then
we had to
go to Wild Wild West. Now, the thing about this is someone had to stay and watch the print. And John and I could have left, but we couldn't leave our dude.
That's right. We were in it together.
We suffered through that atrocity.
That's right.
And I've never seen
it. No, was it Rocky?
No, I think it was just the two of us. You said you couldn't leave me.
That's why we're always be brothers.
That's
my friend.
That's where we're brothers in Wild Wild West.
Because I didn't like it.
Because we said we're all in this together. And when Will Smith stuffs his ass down that chimney tonight, find the jolliest bunch of assholes.
It's not a good movie, y'all. I think had the experience of having to stay up late to watch it, but it's not good. I didn't think it was as bad as y'all had described it, but
it's worse.
It wasn't good.
Well, if you remember, like, Will Smith had this thing with 4th of July movies where he was on
an unstoppable winning streak.
And it ended.
It stopped. It stopped.
Abruptly.
The best thing about this movie was the song.
Yeah.
Loveless.
Was a madman.
And do you remember Michelle bought Wild Wild West?
Why'd you buy Wild Wild West?
One of us just was like, picked up and said, why'd you buy Wild Wild West? And somebody else went, what? She bought Wild Wild West? Why'd you buy Wild Wild West? And she got so upset.
And that just never stopped for months.
Why'd you buy
Wild Wild West?
Remember when we were having that water gun fight at the theater?
Dodge this.
Oh, dodge this.
And she came in and Crystal opened the door and said, dodge this, and shot her. And
she turned and walked out.
Go for it. And turned around and walked away.
And
oh, no one will understand that, but damn, was it funny.
And I think if we're going to end this, we have to end it with Fight Club.
Oh.
You know my favorite part about Fight Club?
We don't talk about it.
Is on New Year's Eve at my old house.
Tell the story.
Glenn. Watching it is, I think the party had split up. Some people were on the trampoline, some people were in
we kind of had this thing where what's going to be the last movie of the year we watch? Kind of.
Glenn parked himself drinking on the sofa and had Fight Club on.
By yourself, pretty much the entire
yourself,
night.
The whole night.
There's a party going on, and you're watching Fight Club by yourself.
To see Fight
Well, because y'all were all talking about wrestling, and that wasn't my thing. So I'm like, well, I'm going to go watch Fight Club.
And Patrick's girlfriend walked in the room. There couldn't have been more than 10 minutes left in the movie.
Like, I think they were up in the deserted hallway or whatever, waiting for the moms to go on.
Yeah, and I think which people listening need to understand is Glenn doesn't get mad. Glenn doesn't raise his voice or lose his temper, and we could all hear him at this
unless
point.
Unless there is righteous indignation.
All through the house when he's like, you wait till fucking now to tell me to ask to turn this off? That was fucking hilarious.
Well, if I remember, I don't think she asked to turn it off. No, I think she just walked in and wanted to watch the countdown, so she just walked in and picked up the remote and changed the channel.
Oh, see, I was outside. I didn't see it happen.
No, I think the countdown had ended. Like, it was the new year.
Yeah. Was that the same night of the beans and the turkey carcass? No,
I don't think so.
That might have been a different.
We need to do that again.
Sure.
Eat a turkey carcass
and some beans and a pot of beans
with the wooden spoon. tell me a place and time.
I'll fucking
do it. But yeah, Fight Club. So I'm talking about Meatloaf or Jared Leto.
God.
That is a movie that, I can pick it up today and watch it. And mm-hmm. I think some people get the wrong message from that film.
Oh, I agree.
But Chuck Palahniuk's a great writer. The book's really good. Movie's really good. It's an incredible.
This is one of the rare instances where I think the script might be better than the book.
I completely agree.
At least
with you.
The ending.
I've read both of them. I think the ending of this.
But so yeah, we had.
You're not your fucking khakis.
Remember the scene where Tyler's looking right into the camera, making his big speech about you are not all this, and
we thought the print went bad.
It freaked us the hell out where we ran up there because
that was when directors were starting to get really fucking annoying, like that. And Spielberg did the same shit with Saving Private Ryan, where it looked like they were shutter ghosts through the film because of the style of film he went with.
Kids, see, back in the day, film used to run through projectors.
Yeah.
Now
we really
thought
Fight Club was about to break.
So things would brain wrap. And when they brain wrapped, you had to trace the tails out. And certain managers would sometimes come and grab the whole fucking thing and throw it on the ground and be declared by Jeremy as a dickhead. Because that's what he was.
Oh, man.
Dickhead!
But so yeah, 1999 was quite the year in film, since we've been sitting here talking about it.
I mean, and
movies.
Honestly, quite the year in our lives, the more we're talking about it.
Yeah.
Remember when, how hard was it for them to make a blue lightsaber? Remember they released all the toys.
Qui-Gon was the first one.
It was Qui-Gon and Darth Maul, and then it was Mace Windu. And
Windu didn't get one, I think, in the first one.
All right, and we just kept waiting for the blue one. Kept
and eventually Obi-Wan's came out,
but it was a long
wait. That episode one hilt is still my favorite hilt.
Yeah? I got you. I got that one from the Disney World.
I want to go just for that.
But,
all right.
So, yeah.
This is a fun
this
trip
really
down
was.
Memory lane.
Yeah.
It really was.
This podcast wouldn't exist if we didn't work at the movie theater.
Honestly, yeah. These experiences are what made us want to sit here and talk to you guys.
That's
right. So, you know, again, as always, there are many places to find us. Anchor Podcasts, Google Podcasts, a host of other platforms. And if you can do us the favor, we'll never ask you for anything else, but just follow us on Spotify podcast. It really helps the show out more than you can possibly imagine. Helps keep us going and elevates the show and gives us the ability to keep doing what we're doing. You can also find us on other platforms like...
Follow us at The Awesome Fellage Podcast. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, and you can watch our videos at awesome.village.pod on TikTok.
Thank you very much. This has been Greg.
Ryan.
John.
And I'm Glenn.
We will see you next week. Take care.